It gets back to how I like to break down business systems: planning, people, process, technology, right? You either, if you have a problem inside of your organization, it falls into one of those four buckets. If you want to grow your organization, you have to tap into each one of those four buckets to be able to do that. And, you know, again, it gets back to when you have those similar organizations, one's growing, one's dying. Why is that? One has figured out, you know, how to leverage those four pillars, and they're all working together towards that common goal of driving growth, operating with excellence, you know, top-notch quality, top-notch customer service. And the other one is concerned, you know, about what's happening, you know, right now, you know, and kind of can't see, you know, beyond their nose.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand.Life show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome to another episode of the Your Living Brand.Live show. Welcome back, my wonderful audience. It's Ben again. And thank you for coming back week after week, month after month, and year after year. I really, truly appreciate it. Thanks for emailing me at ben@yourbrandmarketing.com. Thanks for visiting me on LinkedIn and telling me what you like, what you don't like, what you're thinking about, and what you're curious about. And I appreciate it every single week. And, you know, we get lots of comments, lots of ideas. And the more that comes up, the better, because it helps me get better guests that could add value to you. And that's what this show is about. It's how do I add value to you? And how do I make your lives better and give you the insights that you need to be able to do whatever you do a little bit more effectively? So this week, I've got David Chrysler with me, and David has a company called the Chrysler Club, and I love it. No, he's not a car guy. Well, maybe he is a car guy, but you know what this company is all about? It's about process engineering in the manufacturing industry. And David, welcome to the show, and let's talk about managing systems without addressing the root cause.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ben. Excited to have this conversation with you and appreciate the invitation and looking forward to getting into it.
Well, we've had some interesting conversations over the last, I can't even remember when you and I met. We met probably close to a year ago now. And
yeah,
we know a lot of people together in the manufacturing industry, and I'm learning more about manufacturing. You know, I come from the print industry, but I always find people who actually put things together fascinating. It's always fascinating to me to sit there and say, okay, it starts out as, you know, raw materials, whether it's metal or it's plastic or whatever, it goes through some process. And in the end, you have something that is incredibly useful to somebody. And it's amazing how few people actually think about the process of what it takes to get something from that, you know, that pure raw material out the door to something that is actually useful within the market today.
Really incredible. And when you think about it, you know, we're both have a background in the print industry. That's a great one to pick on from a manufacturing standpoint, because you hear a lot of people talk about, you know, print is dead and it's being replaced by digital initiatives. And to your point, the things that most people don't realize who are outside of any type of manufacturing environment is just how many things are manufactured, and specific to print, how many things are printed and how many different types of printing technologies exist in the market today. And, you know, while that technology continues to grow and expand, new technologies are coming into existence and maybe replacing some of the technology of old, right? At the end of the day, print is still very much alive. It will be for many, many decades to come, because, you know, circuit boards inside of your phone that you take for granted, those are printed, right? There's all kinds of things that are printed that are maybe everyday items that you touch, like maybe we don't read as many newspapers anymore and those have been replaced with digital copies, but you still have them out there. They're still in print. We have one about 2 miles away from where we're, you know, where I'm sitting right now. giant newspaper manufacturing facility. So yeah, for all of the things that are out there in the manufacturing world, you know, it's kind of why shows like How It's Made and, you know, Dirty Jobs or something like that, it's why those shows become so popular, because I think for most people, it's really interesting to understand that you can take one form of something, right? Paper, metal, wood, what have you, and turn it into something completely different. And maybe that's by adding additional materials. Maybe that's by just putting it through some type of production and manufacturing process. But, you know, everything we touch, everything we utilize in our day-to-day lives have been influenced and, you know, impacted by manufacturing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, shout out to Mike Rowe and Dirty Jobs and, you know, and the, was it MicroWorks is his foundation, is MicroWorks. Yeah. You know, it's all about how do you get there and get from A to B? How do these things actually get produced? I mean, when you were talking about printing, I'm just thinking about the billions of boxes of cereal alone that get produced on a yearly basis. That's all printed. You know, every single label on every single thing that you buy at a grocery store or a pharmacy or whatever, those are all printed. Yes, you know, maybe direct mail is not as, you know, prominent as it used to be. I used to print millions and millions of pieces of direct mail 25 years ago, but it's still viable and it's still something that works. It's just got to be for the right person and the right industry. We need to think of all these things when we're thinking about manufacturing, is that without things being produced, all we would have is raw trees or raw metal or pulp and paper board or whatever, and nothing that we actually utilize on a daily basis. I'm looking at the monitors, you know, the 227 inch monitors that I have in front of me. None of this stuff would exist.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's very true. And, you know, coming out of the pandemic, I think what a lot of people saw, you know, you hear these things like supply chain disruptions, right? Why can't we find the thing that we need at the store? Why is the thing now 2, 3, 4, 5 times what it was prior to? And all of those types of situations can be traced back to manufacturing, to the supply chain, where things are made, right? And if we're purchasing more things that are made overseas or with overseas components versus things that are made domestically, you know, and depending on where you're at, right? If you're overseas, well, that's one thing. But if you're domestic, you know, and you are expecting these items to be produced and shipped for a low cost, well, all of those things have now been impacted. You know, one of the stats that I had seen was that a typical shipping container that you would expect to receive, you know, electronic goods in from overseas, let's say, pre-pandemic, the average price of that was around $4,000.
Yeah, for a 40-foot container to ship.
Exactly.
Exactly. Within, yeah.
Around the time of the pandemic and kind of due to a lot of the issues that that created, the average price was somewhere in the $20,000 to $25,000 range for that same container ship. So you think about, you know, okay, if that container had 100 refrigerators on it, you know, what's the cost now to ship one of those refrigerators, right? And obviously the companies need to, you know, recoup some of that cost, which is why you see some exorbitant prices for some of the goods that we were typically purchasing. And not to make this a push about where things are manufactured, but I think it's important because that way people can understand, hey, when we do create things where we consume them, the pricing maybe higher for certain aspects, maybe the labor cost is higher, but if we source the parts here and we can eliminate some of those exorbitant shipping costs, right? Well, now we've got potentially a cost savings. You could definitely get your goods faster if they're manufactured closer to where you're at. And all of those things apply to kind of no matter what you're talking about. If we're talking about print going to a local commercial printer or more of a regionalized larger printer, if you're, you know, have those requirements, that could benefit you more than possibly, you know, going somewhere else, whether that's, you know, East Coast, West Coast, whether that's North, South, whether that's overseas, because that for a while was an option to buy print and produce it overseas and have it brought back. So,
well, it's interesting because we used to use a distributed print process where we had three different printers across North America that were printing the material at the same time. And some of it went to the East Coast, some of it went to the West Coast, and the rest of it ended up in the middle. And we worked with three different direct mail houses to be able to do this because we're producing 1.5 to 2 million pieces of direct mail. And because of that, if you think of what the shipping costs, first of all, to get all that raw paper to one press, then you have to get the presses, you know, to produce all that material, and then to be able to ship it to a direct mail house, then get it out to the direct mail house, out to the doors. First of all, you're slowing the whole process down.
Yeah.
And you're costing you a fortune just moving stuff here and there. We've got to this just on time or just in time, you know, the JIT model where, you know, years ago, you used to carry inventory. People used to have tons and tons and tons of inventory just sitting on a shelf, you know, because they didn't know how long it was going to take to get it.
Yeah.
Today, you can sit there and people might have 36, 48 hours, 72 hours, maybe a week's worth of inventory. And when that inventory all of a sudden gets dried up quickly or too quickly, panic sets in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've to the print industry, probably over the last 18 months or so, have talked to many print manufacturers that, you know, you hear kind of both sides of it, right? So on one hand, you have the companies that are bringing in additional inventory when they can find it because they don't know when it's going to come back in stock. On the opposite side of that, you've got some companies that are saying, you know, hey, if you're not going to be utilizing it, you're pulling that capacity out of the marketplace, right? So it's been an interesting dynamic. And there's some other things that have affected the print industry specifically, you know, some toner manufacturing facilities that have had some catastrophic disasters that they're trying to recoup from in the midst of all of the COVID, you know, and pandemic issues that people are seeing. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things at play, which I think kind of brings us back to, you know, how we started the conversation and really talking about the things that you're doing internally and how those things can ultimately impact these external factors that everybody is being forced to navigate through. There's nobody that's kind of escaping that pain. So it's a matter of how do we utilize the systems? How do we utilize, you know, the people, the processes and our planning? How do we utilize all of what we have today to leverage that and to successfully navigate these challenges that kind of continue to get thrown into people?
Well, and that's the work that you do, if I'm right, you know, day in and day out, to sit there and say, all right, let's take a look at where we are, where do we want to go, and how do we get there? Is that correct of a lot of the work that you do?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, it's kind of the, if you don't know where you're going, you don't know where you've been, and it's easy to get lost along the way.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's what many people deal with on a day-to-day, because with all of these challenges that we've kind of talked about and laid out, right? What are you kind of left to do? Fight fires, make it to another day. You know, nobody has time to sit down and, you know, document process. Nobody has time to go back and, you know, make sure that the new person that's trained, you know, is trained up to the right spot because, oh my gosh, it just took me 6 months to find this person, let alone worry about, you know, how I'm going to get them trained. And, you know, then I've got Joe who just put in his 2 weeks notice and I've got this issue going on. And it's, you know, a never ending kind of battlefield of the inputs that are hitting ops leaders on a day-to-day basis, business owners, ops leaders, you know, kind of wherever they're at in that, you know, management leadership hierarchy. But you've got those inputs, those fires that are coming at you day in and day out. And if you don't have, you know, an attack plan, right, and you don't really know where you're going outside of, I'm just trying to make it to tomorrow, it could be really challenging. It's easy to get burnt out. It's easy to get overwhelmed. It's easy to take those things out on your team. And then you start to get yourself into a really ugly cycle of, you know, just kind of surviving is what I call it. And it's no fun. It's just no fun.
So how do we get people out of this firefighter mode? How do you get people out of, you know, I get up in the morning, I put on my fireproof pants, you know, I don my helmet, I grab my axe, and off I go again today, not knowing what's going to be on, to get them into the fact that says, okay, we've got a strategic plan. Our people are trained. We have a process. We know what we're going to do. We know where we're going, and we know what's coming down the pipe, so we can plan for it. How do we move people from a position of chaos? And, you know, there's a, you and I see a lot of companies in chaos.
Yeah.
To a place where companies are sitting there going, okay, Joe just quit. This person just, you know, we have to fire this other person. We've still got procurement issues, but we're going to be okay because we've got this, this, and this in place. How do we move people from a position of chaos to a position of saying, yeah, there's still minutia going on in our lives, but we're going to be fine because we know where we're going?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I kind of say it one of two ways, you know, depending on what your favorite adage is. But, you know, the first way is, how do you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time. Okay. And the other way to say it is that it's taken you a long time to get to the point that you've kind of recognized that you're tired of being in that fight or flight, that fire person mentality. And so it's going to take some time to walk yourself out of that. But getting to the place where in your own mind, in your own being, you know that you want to do things differently and that you're open to techniques and utilizing specific frameworks to do that, that's the unlock. Because anybody can kind of, from a surface level, talk the talk, right? But it's really about not just giving it lip service, because this stuff is hard work. There is no shortcut for it. And that's why I say it's taken you a long time to get to this point, right? Because you've built your business over the course of time. If you work for a really large organization, that they have been doing it the same way for a long time. So in kind of either situation, you have challenges that are going to take time to unpack, you know, where we've been, and then start to put things in place where you can actually move forward. So having that mindset, being in the right mindset, understanding that it's going to take time, it's going to be a lot of work, understanding that you're probably going to have some setbacks along the way, that you're going to make mistakes, your team is going to make mistakes, all of those types of things. Those are the cues that I look for when I have conversations with ops leadership folks about, are they ready? Because if they're not ready, everybody's just wasting their time. And that's not about, you know, can I sell them something? That has nothing to do with it. I've lived this life. I've done it for 25 years. I've been given many a tough challenges from an operational leadership role. And so I understand and can empathize with where they're at, which is why I say, if you're not in that mindset, if you're not ready to really dig in and do the hard work, then just relish yourself to the fact that you're going to continue to fight fires until you're ready to change.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. I look at it as the fact that you don't gain 50 pounds overnight. And it probably will take you just as long, if not longer, to lose that 50 pounds if you want to keep it off.
Yeah.
And you don't do it without sweat. You don't do it without swearing. And you don't do it without setbacks.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to tell people and have people realize that, yeah, it's going to get messy and it's going to get uglier and people are going to get more frustrated before it gets better.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of the process that nobody wants to hear.
Well, 100%. And there's plenty of people that will tell you, you know, hey, transformation's no big deal, right? We'll slap some new technology in there, you'll be off to the races. And, you know, it just, it's frustrating being in my position as somebody that owns a consulting business. As I said, I've done the hard work. I've gotten my hands dirty. I've had to try to figure out how do we create better process? How do we engage people in a situation where you don't know anybody, right? Like those were the kinds of challenges that I had. Hey, here's this facility that's struggling. You know, I know you don't know anybody. I know you don't know the equipment. I know you don't really know the products, but hey, go figure that out. See if you can sell some more of it and make more money while you're at it, because, you know, we want to turn this thing around, you know? And so, to your point, it gets ugly sometimes, but when you have a framework to follow, when you use a methodology, and when you kind of take that systematic approach to it, it does work itself out in the long run. And as long as you're communicating your why are we doing this to your team, to everybody that's involved, more times than not, you end up picking up steam along the way, and you end up making sustainable change much, much faster than you would have ever done had you not kind of been in the right mindset and started to make this shift.
No, I agree. I just, you know, put an article up on the homepage of Your Brand Marketing. It's from Harvard Business Review. And the title of the article is 70% of change management initiatives fail. And you look at that number and it's huge. And the reason that they fail is because there isn't the people, purpose, and, you know, money put behind those change management initiatives in concert to make it work. You know, your leadership team needs to be dedicated to change. They need to be, put their money where their mouth is. They need to put their roll up their sleeves and do the hard work to make it work. And a lot of people said, oh, this is hard. This is harder than I thought it was going to be. This is, you know, this is frustrating. You know, my people are getting frustrated. Are we doing the right thing? You know what? It takes time. And I think that anybody that doesn't have somebody helping them guide them through the process, whether it's internal or external, who can sit there and say, yeah, this is going to get worse before it gets better, and be honest about it, is setting people up for failure.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, there is a similar, from a straight up technology implementation, there is a similar failure rate. Some of the kind of reviews and articles that I've read cited as high as 85% wow. failure rate. And it really, to your point, it all boils down to the same problem. Leadership has an idea of why, but they haven't dug into the why enough to understand how is it going to impact the facility, the organization. And then beyond that, they haven't done a good enough job of sharing the why. Yes. Everybody loves to share the how. You know, everybody wants to talk about, we're going to buy this new ERP system, we're going to implement this new CRM, we've got a new whatever. You know, and so everybody loves talking about the how, because the how ends up being easy to understand from like an ROI perspective. There's a lot of kind of black and white around the how. The why is a lot more gray. So what I find, though, is if you can spend 80% of your time talking about why, and before you decide on the how, if you engage people to understand the why, right? So it's a two-way communication street. If from a leadership perspective, you're identifying, hey, we've got this KPI that's telling me we're really struggling in this area. And then we take that and go to the people that are closest to the process, that are near, right? So before and after the process, and we start having these conversations, say, hey, here's what this KPI looks like to me. What's your experience? Get that data. Then you can go back and start to formalize and have some ideas around, okay, I think that, you know, we really need to investigate some technology or process improvement or, you know, something along those lines. And here's why. Here's why I think it's going to help. Here's why we need to improve this KPI. And then you go back and say, okay, well, now how, right? What and how? And so just doing those couple of things, I you know, firmly believe and have seen it in my, you know, facilities I've been responsible for, clients I've worked with, it moves the needle significantly, because now we are talking about, you know, the impact. How is this going to make people's lives better, right? You're still asking that how question, but it's really the why, you know, like, here's why we're doing it, because we want to impact how you are executing these processes. We want to, you know, automate this part. We want to eliminate waste. We want to eliminate errors. All of those types of things fall into those buckets.
And to add on to that, it's about being able to create those aspirational conversations. Once we do this, what will it enable us to do? Once we fix this problem, what will this enable us to do, either individually as individual people within the organization or as an organization itself? And hopefully we can marry those viewpoints. So people sit there and say, well, if I'm working on this thing, all it's going to do is benefit the company. No, it's got to benefit the company and the individuals within it. You know, if they're going to go through the chaos of change, if they're going to be frustrated, if they're going to sit there and put in the blood, sweat, and tears, there's got to be benefit for them on an individual level when on the outside. And there's got to be celebration along the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with that. Too often what you see happening, especially in larger businesses, when they go through some sort of a change management initiative, a lot of it is around this idea that we can reduce cost. And a lot of that then boils down to reduce cost through labor reduction.
Yeah.
Right.
My job is going to be eliminated and exactly, the company's going to make more money.
Yes. Exactly. And that's really a huge, huge mistake from a leadership and organization perspective. The way you should be looking at this is, if we deploy a particular technology, if we go through some sort of process improvement, continuous improvement, lean manufacturing, right? Like, I don't care what you know, terminology we're going to use, but if you go through some of these events, the next thing you should be asking, to get back to what your point was, how do we redeploy these assets? How do we redeploy the brain power, the collective brain power of people that we've amassed over the course of time to double down now on this effort? So if we free up somebody in customer service, in sales, how do we get them making more outbound phone calls? How do we drive more leads? How do we let them close more business? How does that drive growth? If we free up somebody in operations, okay, how can we now produce X number of widgets more so that we have them available to sell faster than our competition because we've now put them on the shelf and they're ready to go in inventory? So it needs to be, again, back to what I said, kind of this complete mindset shift of not looking for opportunities from a cost reduction standpoint, but looking at them from an opportunity cost standpoint to say, where can we redeploy our best assets, those being our people? How do we redeploy them so we can build our business, so we can grow faster now that we've eliminated waste, that we've reduced error, that we've, you know, put these additional, you know, abilities to increase efficiency and utilization throughout the organization.
And give people the feeling that they're doing something more important and more effective.
Yeah.
I mean, a perfect example, my son was working for a manufacturer this summer, and they had a whole bunch of people whose job was strictly to do grinding. At the end of the manufacturing process, they ground off the excess bits. Well, if a machine can do that as effectively or more effectively, what if you could take all those people and move them over to quality control, or put them in somewhere where they're sitting there not grinding and, you know, rooting their hands and their ears all day long, and give them a job that, wait a second, there's purpose and there's meaning and there's something they can see the benefit of it at the far side of the job. You know, it gives people a reason to move up, move around, and be able to feel that they are more important to the company, and the company therefore becomes more important to them.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's, you know, I kind of utilize the example of how can you take two similar companies, right? Two print manufacturers, two machine shops. And you've got, on one hand, you've got a company that is talking about how busy they are and they can't keep up and their incoming is just crazy. They, you know, are looking for more people because they're growing so fast. And in the same town, 2 miles over, you've got another company that's saying, we just can't find anybody to work. Nobody wants to show up on time. You know, all these people do is complain. All they do is make mistakes. It's just costs me money every day we open. You know, why is that, right? It comes down to the engagement of people, right? So
and leadership. Kind of,
yeah, absolutely. You know, it gets back to how I like to break down business systems: planning, people, process, technology. Right. You either, if you have a problem inside of your organization, it falls into one of those four buckets. If you want to grow your organization, you have to tap into each one of those four buckets to be able to do that. And, you know, again, it gets back to when you have those similar organizations, one's growing, one's dying. Why is that? One has figured out, you know, how to leverage those four pillars, and they're all working together towards that common goal of driving growth, operating with excellence, you know, top-notch quality, top-notch customer service. And the other one is concerned, you know, about what's happening, you know, right now, you know, and kind of can't see, you know, beyond their nose. So
where do you start with that company that can't find good people, that, you know, feel that there's not enough business out there, all these different driving factors? When you're brought in the door, where do you start with that company to be able to, first of all, assess the situation, find out what reality truly is, and then help them move beyond these limiting thought processes?
Well, it always starts with the leadership team. You know, if the leadership team is not of the right mindset and is not interested, because you've kind of got different factors at play. So you may have an organization where an owner recognizes that they have some issues with their operations leadership folks. And so they may engage me. The owner is, you know, all on board and wants to do these things, sees some obstacles with the operations leadership folks. So you start there. If it's the business owner, you start there. But oftentimes I kind of say, like, if you want to see what the problem is, just take a look in the mirror, right? And that's for the leadership folks, because typically the people in leadership are the barrier to entry. You know, most people that have ever worked for me personally, that I've ever been engaged with from a manufacturing perspective, by and large, right, 99 out of 100 of them, all they want to do is they want to come to work. They want to put in an honest day's effort. They want to be, you know, recognized for the contributions that they want to provide into that company. They want to be compensated fairly for those contributions. And then they want to go home and do their own thing, whether that's spend time with family, spend time with friends, right? So by and large, people that work, you know, do the heavy lifting day in and day out, they're just trying to make it, right? And it's the leadership's position to make sure that those things are happening. So what do they have to do? They have to go out there. They have to find out what problems are in these guys and girls' way, right? And remove those roadblocks. So for me, that's where it always starts. It always starts with leadership, understanding where are they at? What are they seeing? And then I always spend time out on the floor, because you always learn what's really going on, how many times they've already given this particular suggestion to, you know, John in leadership or Bill over there or whomever, right? So you start to put the puzzle together of what's happening in the organization, how is change perceived, how are suggestions received, and then you start to go through just the questioning process and find out kind of who's telling the truth, right? Somewhere in the middle of what's actually happening. And then we talk about, you know, okay, here's where we're at. Where do we want to go? You know, what are we trying to do? Is that unlimited growth? Do we have one particular vertical we're trying to go after? Is this maybe a quality initiative that we have? So we need to develop a much stronger quality management system. And it's kind of after all of that, do we dive into the, you know, kind of the what of the matter? So
No, and that's great. I mean, you just so much there. People have got to sit there, rewind about 5 minutes and listen to that again. Seriously, there's a lot to unpack there. But what I want to do is I want to ask you two quick questions and then we're going to let you out the door. The first question is, what have we missed? What's the one piece of advice you would want to give people to be able to help make their lives a little bit better?
I think the best advice, especially when I think about what do I wish I knew, you know, 20 years ago from an operations leadership perspective, and that is really just spending more time with the people that are doing the heavy lifting. Engage with them, find out what's going on, talk about things outside of the organization, outside of the department, outside of the immediacy of what's happening. Because when I think back to all of the success I've enjoyed, both when I had my corporate career, now as a consultant, it's those connections where the best, literally the best ideas were ever generated from. And so taking and getting that engagement, receiving those ideas, and then from a leadership perspective, understanding, okay, what are kind of the bounds of that? I know the goal that I'm trying to hit. How can we bring these things together? How can we try some of this to keep people engaged, to see some quick wins? I think that's, you know, one thing that gets missed because we're all so busy. It's easy to say, I'll do it tomorrow. It's easy to say, I'm going to spend the whole afternoon out there. And at the end of the day, it very rarely happens as much as it should be happening. So that's the one piece of advice I would give to anybody in an operations leadership role, business owner, operations leadership, team lead, anybody that leads people. If you want to move the needle for your business, for your department, for your area of responsibility, spend more time with the people doing the process and that are closely related to the processes you're ultimately responsible for.
I love it. Great ideas can come from anywhere. So, David, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, best way. I'm very active on LinkedIn and Twitter, so you can always find me across social. And outside of that, you can find me on our website, which is just thechrysler.club.
Perfect. And we'll make sure that we put all that in the show notes. So here's the last question I ask everybody. As you get in your car and you drive away after a meeting, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
Wow, that's a great question. So I think for me, I've always wanted to make an impact on people, and I always want to treat them with empathy and let them know that, you know, I've kind of lived their life. And I think that's the unique thing that I bring to my consulting business is that I've done this. I've lived this life. I've made hard decisions. I've made bad decisions, and that I'm just a real person. You know, I put my shoes on the same way. I really want to help people. And whether or not that results in some sort of, you know, paid engagement, that's kind of always secondary to me. I want people to remember that I really cared about the things that they told me. And I always try to remember specific things about people that make that connection because I'm really just working on building relationships. So I'd love for somebody to think of me in that light that, hey, this is just a genuine person that cares about what's going on, loves what he does, and wants to see people succeed in life.
I love it. I think it was Teddy Roosevelt that said, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. So thanks for caring, David. Thanks for being an amazing guest. And thanks for all the great things you do.
Thanks so much, Ben.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at YourBrandMarketing.com. That's www.YourBrandMarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?